Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have John, and I have Mikey's replacement here. We have the Illini Oracle, Robert Rosenthal, joining us. A little clap for that.
Just think if when Mikey went down with an injury, if they replaced him with me.
Yeah, who are you? Like Zach 18. Grant?
Yeah.
Marchy Murdoch? Who was Mikey's backup?
Martiz Barr.
Robert Barr.
Bringing it. God, that would be so funny just to see me try and run one route. Oh, it'd be hilarious.
What route would you run if you had discretion?
Well, on the playground, boys, let me tell you. The stop and go worked against everyone. I played more QB than anything. Not because of an arm, not because of skill, but because I designed plays.
Ah.
Which was really just one play. Okay, so we're playing Nerf on the playground, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the out of bounds, that's the out of bounds, blah, 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 whatever. You line, everybody goes out for pass, there's no rushing, so it's just, some of those plays where one guy's quarterback standing yelling, somebody get open, and it's that kind of football. The play was everybody go right. The guy all the way outside over here go left. And as the whole play flows to the right, every defender flows to the right, and the kid going left comes open every single time. No one could resist the movement of the entire field going right. So basically, we need to run that play on Saturday against Penn State and win the game.
I was just going to say, we know Barry Lunny is a listener of the podcast, so maybe he's getting a couple late ideas.
Yep, clip it.
All right, who do we volunteer as the guy running the one route the other direction?
Isaiah? Yes.
He's got to draw the defense, right? Maybe
what
tip.
Who are we choosing to be the receiver? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the one that runs the different route. Against the grain.
Leak. LZ.
Oh.
Bring it. If this happens on Saturday, if we leak LZ out to the side and score a touchdown,
we're clipping this.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, we're immediately putting this out.
I am not joking. John, are you watching Vikings?
I am on my phone.
Did you see that touchdown?
I did.
What it was?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, they ran a mesh concept and everyone, the entire defense flowed to the right side, and then there was just a dude wide open in the left corner of the end zone.
And that was amazing. That was live. That just happened. Oh my gosh! This is
a sign.
Okay.
All right,
I'm predicting a victory.
Yeah, I was gonna say let's get into predictions
speak
real quick.
Anything into existence good for the line right now.
And then the next thing that will happen is sorry, your podcast. I'll shut up.
No, we
that's amazing.
We figured we would get together. I feel like everyone at this point's talked about the Kansas game. We don't have to touch too much on that, but we want to have a little preview for the Penn State, the Orange Out game this weekend, Saturday. So someone explain this to me. Fox pulled the Big Noon kickoff.
Yeah.
But the game is still on Fox, so they don't pull it from their network. They just pull the game day experience of them coming to campus, or how does that work?
I mean, if you want me to rant, I'll rant.
Go for it.
They pulled the pregame show. God, you see it on my face, right? I'm starting to get
he's tensed up, folks. Ruby red.
Okay. Here's the issue. Because of the tweet, and I got so many people responding we should have won at Kansas. If we win at Kansas, then stop. No, that's not the issue here. If this was game day, we have gone through that experience 5 times. If we win and Michigan wins, then in 2 weeks, they might bring game day if we're both undefeated, and then we lose the game. We're used to that experience. This was... Remember my tweet that said, I might go live on a billboard unless the Penn State game is at night. I want to protest until this gets put as a night game.
Yep.
And then what it came out, it's like, yes, actually, Fox is pushing for that to be their feature game, and so they're going to bring Big Noon Saturday. So let's all just ease up on it's not going to be a night game, fine, whatever, but we will get their pregame show. We've never had one of those in Champaign. No, it's not game day, but we'll get Urban Meyer and Matt Leinart wandering around or whatever. And so they announced that a month ago, like August 8th or whatever, that, you know, yes, Big Noon Saturday is coming to Champaign. And then they pulled it. They don't do that, okay? They don't say we're going here. Game day has switched a few times where they said we're going here and here, and then they went to that system of where they only announce, like, they will only announce, like, the week of or the Sunday before, maybe Saturday night, hey, so-and-so, we're coming to you next weekend or whatever. But this Big Noon Saturday, like, they don't pull it. If this was Madison, if this was Columbus, if this was Lincoln, they wouldn't do this because there'd be such an uproar that, you know, that's not, they're only doing this because we're Illinois, and they had a meeting and they're like, God, that'd be a really, really crappy thing to do. Should we? Well, it is Illinois. Nobody will care, right? Okay, pull it from Illinois. That's why this happened. And that's what makes me angry. That's why, you know, it is just taking advantage of poor little Illinois. Let's just, who cares? We can do this to them. So when people are like, oh, it's Fox, so you got to deal with, you know, that's your bread and butter. No, no. They had a meeting somewhere, and in that meeting, they really debated whether they can do this because it's such a weak move, and they only decided they would do it because we're Illinois.
I'll push back a little bit on that in the sense of I agree that, like, they definitely knew that Illinois would not, like, the fans would not care. There would be no uproar. I don't know if it would – I think they would have done this to anyone besides a blue blood. Like, I don't even – I think they
might have even done this – Because of Dion.
Exactly. I think they might have even done this to Madison or to, I don't know, Iowa City or – like, name any, like, top 25-ish program that hasn't been – relevant in terms of like New Year's Six Bowls. And then I would say like they might even pull it then because they're trying to get everything they can out of the Dion train before they realize that like everyone in the Pac-12 starts beating up on, or not everyone, but most teams in the Pac-12 start beating up on because they have no line depth at all. But that's just my opinion in terms of like, yes, there is obviously something to it of like Illini fans are not going to get all up in arms and probably don't even realize what a big deal that it would have been to have Big Noon kickoff, like the vast majority of them. But I think it's more to do with Colorado and not necessarily to do with Illinois.
I mean, I immediately heard from a guy who had, you know, Grange Grove has this concierge thing where they'll set up your entire ticket. I immediately heard from a guy who had heard the Big Noon Saturday is going to be there and booked one of the $1,000 tents, you know, just for that, just to be in the background, just for his tailgate group to experience that. I mean, like, that's what this, like, this isn't just, oh, they moved somewhere else. This is said they're coming and changed their mind. And, you know, I heard from, like, I get a lot of DMs, people. Like, I heard from another guy who was like, my kids were fired up about this. I hate this. Like, they are literally changing it and leaving these kids in the lurch. Like, this is what has happened. We have to, like, see that, you know, I understand the coach's stance on it. Like, win games. We're not focused on that stuff. I understand everything else. It still is forever going to bother me that they treat us like this to go to Colorado for a third week in a row when there's a contract. You know, Fox is the new Big Ten partner. They're half of the Big Ten network. They're covering a game of a conference that the team that's leaving their conference that won't be broadcast. You know, this is supposed to be some Penn State and Illinois is part of this. And here's the thing. I'm sorry for going on my soapbox, but let me next week we find out about Purdue, Illinois night game of whether it stays a night game. If they flex out of that to show somebody else, and we don't even have a NBC night game. Like, that's – Purdue has four of them. We have one at Purdue. If that's the only thing that happens, we are the stepchild of the Big Ten. And I hate seeing us treated that way. And I understand just from people listening to this podcast, I will get 10 DMs from people saying, win games and you don't win games. I get it. I understand who we've been more than any other human being on the face of the earth. I get it. But we can't just keep getting treated like this. I'll stop.
Hey, so that Purdue game yesterday, I agreed to a golf tee time at 1 p.m. that day. So I'm already put my eggs in the basket of this game better stay a night game. I'm a little bit worried, though, after seeing them pull a Fox Big Noon kickoff.
Yep. Yep. It would be so hilarious if the Big Ten announces these TV deals, jumps heavily in bed with this Fox, CBS, NBC rotation. And I don't know if we'll be on CBS all year. We only have one game on NBC, the night game, and it might get yanked. And Fox pulls this with their Big Noon show. It would be hilarious.
So safe to say Fox Big Noon kickoff is on your list, Robert?
Yes.
If they come back and say, I don't know, let's say next season they want to do the show, does your tone change? Are you now like, I'm crusading against them?
My campaign to have it empty behind them with Dick Butkus and only Dick Butkus standing with a sign that says Fox does not care about Illinois football.
A sign that says Fox likes Dick. He holds it up.
I honestly will go public. I'm leaving it a little alone.
I can't wait for them to feel the ultimate amount of regret when, you know, Colorado wins like 60-7 or something like that, and we pull off the upset with one of the bigger crowds that we've probably have in recent vintage, and they're just like, oh wow, yeah, would have been great to catch the atmosphere at a top 10 upset. But you know, that's just me.
Okay, I said I was done, and now I'm going to say one more thing.
Do it.
Everything I saw today with this stupid, like, oh, the Colorado State coach said this. Oh, Deion said this. This TMZ college football thing, I'm not about it. I'm 50 years old now. I don't care about your little TMZ. Oh, what did he say? Oh, my gosh. Watch it 10. Let's see. Oh, my gosh. I don't care. Football. My gosh. Sorry.
You don't like the circus? You don't like D's and L's instead of captains? You got dogs and was it leaders?
I don't like it. Leaders. I mean, look, if Deion rebuilds Colorado after 25 years of them trying to figure it out there, good on him. His son is great. Travis Hunter's amazing. Great for them. But I don't care about the extras of college football. I don't care about like anything besides this is my team, that's your team, let's go line them up, see who wins. I don't care about who said what about what coach. I don't care.
All right, can we touch on just quickly, we got a DM. I said I would answer this question or address this on the podcast, but can I read you a DM from Blockhead here?
You can, but I want Bayless to answer first because I'm getting fired up.
All right, Blockhead was asking, this is just a quick Kansas question, then we get into Penn State, but he wanted to get our take on the Kansas reaction. He says, obviously the defense was terrible, but I was actually more disappointed in the offense, particularly the line and Lunny. Let me put it this way. Before the game, if I were to ask you which was more likely or realistic, the offense scoring 35 or more or the defense giving up 22 or less, I think most people would have said 35 plus on a bad defense was more expected than holding a good offense to 22 or less. Sometimes in college, you can't rely on your defense to stop a great offense, and you have to keep pace, and the play calling and the line play were the main reason. Thoughts?
I'd say it's probably more likely against that Kansas defense that you score 35. Also with how good Luke has looked thus far. And just because of how creative that offense is, holding them to, you know, less, three touchdowns or less was going to be a challenge regardless. I think it's more the line than anything. As a man who stood on his own soapbox and shouted about how good this offensive line was going to be. I am not feeling as confident now in terms of the play that you're seeing on the right side. And I think that the growing pains would be expected, but just in terms of the defense that they've gone up against, not necessarily anything super special and getting abused as much as they have. I think that kind of lends itself to the play call sequencing. And I do think that there's something to be desired from Barry Lunny Jr. I'm not trying to excuse him. I think there's been enough in terms of creativity and some level of play calls working on each other that I think it's better, obviously, than the Tony Peterson era. But some things when, I don't know, and I don't know if this was a Bielema call or a him call, but like when you're getting cute and gimmicky on a third and one, when you're able to get absolutely anything in the run game against a Kansas defense, that's just something that you can't be pulling that out. And when you're trying to throw the ball over the place, because yeah, it's a 2 to 3 possession game, but Brett showed that he was willing to punt on a 4th and 1 close to midfield. So obviously you're still feeling somewhat confident in your defense being able to figure it out. So the game isn't, you know, ending in 8 minutes. So make sure that you're still running the ball. I get that there are questions about that, and I'm curious to see how, you know, he kind of adheres his, and we're still kind of seeing this process of him adhering his style of play to a Brett Bielema style of play and marrying the two concepts. I think what you saw at UTSA and what you're still seeing at UTSA is a lot more spread them out. They still ran the ball a bunch and they still do run the ball a bunch, but it's more, you can kind of get away with that in that Southern style of football play, whether it be the Big 12 or I think it's Conference USA or the American. I know UTSA is joint conferences. Doesn't matter. But regardless, you can kind of get away with that more there, whereas in the Big 10 West, you got to be a little bit more power, maybe 2 tight end personnel sets a little bit more. And I just don't know if he's quite there yet. And I'm not saying that he's necessarily wrong. I just think that it needs to be a little bit more of an adaptation to your guys and what is necessary to win games. The one thing I will say is that now that we're getting into the Big Ten portion of the schedule, it should get a little bit easier, not necessarily in terms of being vanilla, but in terms of knowing what you're going to get on a week in, week out basis from a defense in terms of high caliber athletes, but nothing, you know, crazy, crazy difficult. So hopefully you can figure that out. But yeah, the defense kind of is what it is. So 2 creative offenses. I'm not really going to touch more on that because I think that's kind of an anomaly. And I have more issues with decision-making and penalties and being idiotic and not so much the actual schematics of the defense, even though they are a bit questionable.
Why is it that Big Ten West football, everyone has the same offense? I know Wisconsin's trying to change that up, but for so long, is there an element of like we're in the Midwest and it's cold in the winter and we have to run the ball, have good offensive lines? Like, why is it that the Big Ten West got dubbed like you're the power run conference? How did that happen?
I mean, it's complicated, but Iowa and Wisconsin are kind of the people that did that. You know, they're the two schools that started that. I have always thought that it's the defenses that created that. That, you know, as all these teams became known for their defense, you had to play a certain style of football to beat them. You couldn't just straight up, you know, they're going to muck it up. And so, you know, you just had to adapt to that. And it just, you know, it was a big game of if you can't beat them, join them. And, you know, Minnesota slouched toward that. And, you know, Illinois has moved in that direction. And, gosh, even Purdue's probably going to go that way when they were the one try to run it with offense team. So it just kind of was all a function of Iowa and Wisconsin did it, and that was the division. And so everybody needed to just slow down and become that.
Fair enough.
I want to know your idea, your thoughts, Dan, though, on the question, on the Twitter question.
Yeah, I still am more disappointed in the defense than the offense. I mean, we all know that there were lofty expectations, probably unfairly so, that the defense coming off a year where you're the number 2 defense in the country, number 1 by some metrics, that everyone's anticipating another stellar year from the defense. But through 2 games, we've obviously had difficulty breaking in players. I think, I mean, you look at last year, it was a similar slow start, I guess, for the defense. And I'm hopeful that we turn the corner at some point, but I'm still more disappointed in what I've seen on the defensive side of the ball. I think the offense has struggled at times, but they've shown me a few more glimpses. And I really like what I've seen from Luke Altmyer, particularly with his legs too. So I think the offense has enough weapons and has produced enough. It's the defense that's struggled to get stops when they've had to.
Yeah. I mean, I brought this up on Slack today, but like, yeah, if we want the real stat for this season, and this will be inflammatory, but you know, first seven games last year, we gave up 59 points. First two games this year, we gave up 62. So, you know, giving up more points in two games than we gave up in seven games to start last season. So obviously that's the whole thing. Like that's the focus, right? Like there's no other way to, you know, there's no other way to say it. That said, Sidney Brown is playing in this football game in front of me here. You know, Kwan's in Washington, Spoon's in Seattle. Like you lose that much NFL talent and you're going to have to pay, you know, it's going to be an adjustment for the new guys. This is going to be expected. You know, maybe in 5 years, you're at that Iowa defense point where you have guys who have been training in the system for 4 years, ready to step in the very next year. But for now, we just don't have that yet. And the defense is going to take a step back. So yeah, my focus is still on the defense. Well, I think we're going to win games with offense. I think the offense will be much better, but yeah, it's when it was 28-7. I don't think anybody was looking at the 7. Everybody was looking at the 28.
I will say though, I think, and maybe we can segue this into Penn State talk. There really hasn't been any other Big Ten team that has played maybe one, let alone two. There's not been a Big Ten team that has played two arguably top 40-60.
Yes.
Programs in the country this year. Like
yeah. We played Maryland's schedule.
Exactly.
We'd be 2-0
and we'd be feeling so much better.
Everybody would be like, oh, it's still going. It's still got a thing. Mm-hmm. Yes. 100%.
So that's where I take a bit of solace in the fact that I know that there's a narrative about James Franklin not overlooking the fact that the 9 overtime loss still stings and whatever. But in terms of national media and even I think I remember seeing a tweet of like the top 10 most highly bet size or something like that. And number two was everyone's on Penn State -14.5. So the narrative that, you know, we're just the plucky underdog that's going to take over Penn State is definitely not out there. I think that just because you saw two games, two sample sizes against two of the better quarter, I would argue probably maybe the best quarterbacks. I know Drew Allar is probably the best talent we're going to face, but it's also his first Big Ten road test as a starter. So I don't know if he's going to put it together like you saw Daquan Finn and Jalen Daniels put it together. So you might have faced your two best quarterbacks already, your two most creative offenses, the two biggest adjustments in terms of your defensive schemes that you were going to have to implement. And yeah, you're 1-1 in those, and some of the optics look very bad, but I'm not necessarily worried about being able to change it back to what it takes to win Big Ten, not only West, but just Big Ten games in general. So that's where I take a bit more solace in that. And I am almost a bit more excited about what could happen in this Penn State game because of those tests, because they've had so much more adversity thrown. And now that can be a bad thing. Confidence, especially with young men, 18 to 22 years old, trying to figure out how to navigate a new way that they're, you know, figuring out life in terms of, oh, I'm at a Big Ten university trying to figure out a balanced class and high level football. Like, yeah, maybe that shakes your confidence enough that you never get back on track. But they've had enough testing now through 2 weeks that if you're going to see them come out hardened, then this is going to be a perfect sleepy spot for Penn State to overlook us.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Dan, I saw you raise your eyebrow. I don't want to interrupt you. What were you saying?
No, I was just going to ask. John brought up the Penn State first road game of the year. I know, Robert, you've talked about Illinois' struggles in their first road game historically. Is that an Illinois specific thing, or is that, do you think there's some truth to the fact that they might have trouble in a first road test?
I think they might have trouble in the first road test. However, that might be counterbalanced by the fact that Penn State might win the, they might beat Michigan and Ohio State and win the East. Like, this is the best, this is probably the best Penn State team, gosh, 5, 7, 9 years, maybe. We don't know that yet. They could play Michigan and lose big again or whatever. But there is a, you know, there's like, look at the nerd stats. Like, Connelly has them fourth now. Like, or I should say Connelly's laptop. Like, the numbers they're putting up and the number of returnees they have, like, this is setting up for one of those seasons for Penn State. And so, yes, I expect it to be a little rough for them when they get on the road, but also they might be playoff good.
Like, right.
Like, there's a chance they're in the playoff at the end of the year. And so, you know, this could be one of the best teams we've played in years, kind of thing. So there's that balance that, yes, every team when they go on the road looks a little foolish, but there's also this might be a epic Penn State team.
But are you factoring in the orange out?
I am. I mean,
how many points does the orange out account for?
I'll be honest. I'm still so disappointed this isn't a night game. Like, I don't know why I care so much, but like, the thought of coming out to the orange out at night versus the thought to coming out at 11 a.m. it's just not the same in my mind. I don't know why I care so much. Like, Ohio State, Michigan every year is at noon. Like people play these big games this time. I guess it just harkens back to when we also used to be the, like, ESPN side game pre-BTN on, you know, ESPN, the old ESPN Plus. You know, oh, look, we got that 11 a.m. slot again, kind of thing. You know, it just says it's not a big game to me, and I don't know why that is. But I, you know, when you say orange out, I still think, oh my gosh, if this could have been all day tailgating and then we go out, it's energy in the stadium for a night game with number 7 coming to town, it just feels different. I don't know why.
If you look historically, the UNC game a few years back, and then I think night games, Illinois, one of the best atmospheres I recall is the Arizona State game.
Yep.
And that was Arizona State.
Yep. Michigan in 2000 was a night game. You know, a lot of good games that ended in the dark, like Penn State 94 was a game that, you know, it was a 2:30 game that, you know, halfway through the, you know, beginning of the fourth quarter.
It's what month was that dark. In?
What's that?
What month was that game in? 94. Okay. So John and I were both alive for that one by like a month each.
Barely. I think you guys are really upset because we're not going to have a sweet montage shot of, you know, like Luke down on a knee, so that for the homecoming hype video in week 8, like, that they're just going to have the a la Chase Brown last year, where I still just like, I actually just thought of that because I was thinking like night game atmosphere and just thinking of him and that one note, but
the video with
the cinematic,
the video with Spoon walking in the background.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
dun, 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 dun. Yes. What song is that?
How many times have you watched that?
I've watched 150.
I was going to say at least a million,
easily.
If not more.
Yes.
I'm addicted to that video.
Do you know what song that was? You guys are,
I don't remember that.
You guys are young. You're the youth of America. You should know these songs.
I can't picture the song. I picture the image, but I don't remember the song. But also shout out to our video guy, the guy that we hired, Kevin Gao. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
He's unbelievable. I don't think he gets enough recognition, but his hype videos are up there from what I've seen with some of the best schools in the country. So shout out to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the song?
What's that?
I don't remember.
No, Robert was asking us what song that is. Like, we should know.
I can't. I don't even know what. I can't picture the song in my
head.
So.
I can kind of picture it, but.
I wonder if I can pull it up.
Oh, I thought you just knew. Never mind.
No. Sorry. I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were asking us. I honestly just remember that phone. Portion of it, and that's it.
You have it in your favorites videos?
I think I do.
Are we going to DMC?
You guys talk about something else, and I'll look it up and see if I can find it.
I did have a question for both of you guys, and I completely forgot it. So that's really bad podcasting.
That's great audio.
Oh, wow.
It's 2+2.
I had it, but then I was too engaged in the discussion of the night game. And I completely forgot
what I was going to talk about things. How about...
Oh, I remember it now. All right, wow. So do it. This is a question for you guys. What is the... weakest position group on Penn State, just in the entire team.
Good in question.
Your guys' opinion.
I'm looking for this video, so I barely heard your question. So I'm gonna find this.
Right. Weakest position group. I mean, their defense returns so many players and is so good across the board.
They're loaded. They have four
I don't
and
know
five
that
stars.
It's got to be
roster.
On the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, they
That's
have arguably the best. Running back tandem mm-hmm. in the Big Ten, so mm-hmm. it's not that. A five-star quarterback, so I think that narrows it down to what, a tight end or an O-line?
No, I was going to say their wide receiver group.
Their wide receivers?
Jahan Dotson isn't walking through that door. And Dante Cephas is a very talented transfer.
Kent State?
I just think that if there was, in a perfect world, a top 10 team to play in terms of getting their first road test against an inexperienced quarterback who they have the weapons to abuse what is perceived as a weakness in terms of the back four or five of the Illini, but I don't think it's as glaring as some of the skill talent that you see on, you know, like Ohio State. If Ohio State was, I would be like, okay, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Buka are going to go for 250 each type stuff. But I think if there's one thing you can take solace in, it's that they're going to try and establish the run. And if there is a game for the front seven to show out and prove that, you know, they've got all Americans and NFL players on that front seven, then it's going to be, there's no greater test. There's going to be no better tape at the very least at a very selfish level. There's going to be no better tape to put out than against a top flight team like Penn State. So if you want to get to the NFL, if you want to prove your case for being a top, you know, 3-round draft pick, then this is your game to shine, because not that they won't throw to the wide receivers and not that there isn't going to be big plays made by either the secondary or the Penn State wide receivers. But I think if you're going to have a matchup that favors as much as a top 10 matchup can favor the Illini, it's going to be this game upcoming.
I have the weirdest videos on my phone. Sorry, Bayless.
It's okay. That's the dichotomy of this podcast. This video?
I mean, I was Josh Safdie's muse when he wrote Uncut Jam.
Right.
That famous Uncut Jams. Why do I have that on my phone? Like, what's the purpose?
Who would you have sent
Who
that to?
Who even am I?
Or did someone send that to you? And so I've noticed that photos on my iPhone now, if they're sometimes in a text conversation, sometimes they'll just show up in my photo album. I'm like, well, I didn't save that.
Yeah, they usually have like a little quote symbol in the corner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I never told Apple they could just start taking my messages and put them in my photo albums.
Right. Okay, there's Indiana. Maybe I don't.
Getting closer. I'm going
chronologically. I have a Luke Ford WWF promo video in here. Why? I have that.
Wait, WWF or WWE?
Sorry. I'm an old person. It was WWF for me.
Oh.
Way back when.
But now it's Tony Khan's world and everyone's in AEW, right?
Yes, that's right. God. How much can I show my age by saying WWF? Oh, here's the video I took in Wisconsin. Okay, that's me having too many drinks at Wisconsin talking about how the vibe has changed. Okay, we're close now, right? That happened right around then. Did I save the video? I swear I made a video of it, and I guess I didn't.
I feel like you probably tweeted it out, but this might have to be found after the after the pod.
We can like
great audio
retweet.
Okay. Well, we'll have to, I won't have the song to play for you. Oh, there's the stairwell video from Minnesota. What game did you get? You guys were with me at the Iowa game?
You're with me for that.
Minnesota game.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Where we saw the squirrel probably die. It wanted to
yes,
suicidal squirrel. Stop its existence.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I can't find it. I guess I didn't save the video like I thought I did onto my phone.
Guess you'll be digging later.
This has got to be so like the best yes. 5 to 10 minutes of podcast. Uh-huh. I forgot a question. Yeah. Actually, and Bob's just in another world trying to find a video on his phone. Wow, this is.
But when my son turned 29, I did save this clip from New Girl. 29? I cannot tell you how many times in the last year I have quoted Schmidt from New Girl saying 29, 29. Every time I see my son who turned 29 last November, I say that.
That's me and Danny coming up.
If you thought you guys have 29 coming up?
October.
In October?
October 7th, October 21st, homecoming. Danny turns 29.
29? 29?
I need a 29-yard touchdown on Saturday from somebody. That's what I need.
We just spoken into existence.
This is fantastic podcast. This is so, so good.
It's just guys hanging out, talking, talking sports.
If people have made it this far, I love you. I mean that sincerely.
Okay. Sorry. Was there a football question someone asked me while I was
Yes. I asked what do you think is the weakest position room on Penn State? Offense, defense, whatever, you name it. What do you think is the weakest?
I don't know.
Defensive coordinator.
Yes, I'm afraid of their defense. And I heard you say wide receiver, so I'll say O-line. I'm not totally convinced that there's some... Like, Michigan's O-line last year was so good. And, you know, we were getting run over for a bit there, and then we finally figured some stuff out, and especially after Xavier Scott hit Corum pretty hard and knocked him out of the game. You know, Michigan was really – I just remember my reaction the first half. I'm like, oh, this is what an offensive line looks like. Like, this is what we haven't faced this year. I don't know if they're that – and if they're not that, then maybe that's a good thing for us. If their weakness is right there where Johnny and Keith can maybe do something in a Big Ten kind of football game. So, I'll vote O-line. I mean, they're still good. Like it's stupid to sit here and say, what are they bad at? Cause you know, they're probably one of the top five teams in college football this year, but.
Oh yeah. John, just the worst question of all time. It's so stupid.
29. it's like, but it does give me a little hope. Like what my hope is that this game becomes that, like Penn State is like, why isn't this working like it worked last week? And then they fumble and then they throw a pick and then a tip pass lands, you know, it's like, I'm hoping for one of those, like the Penn State visiting fans are frustrated because it's like, oh, this is frustrating. Why can't this happen? So that's what I have my eyes on.
Over under 1.5 times yelling ball this game.
Me yelling ball or anyone?
Everyone in the stadium yelling ball.
Okay. Over.
All right. Mm-hmm. John?
I have to go over as well.
Yes.
Everyone loves a good ball yelling sesh. Yes.
Do people yell ball too if it's just instinctually, even if it's your own team, you know, like fumbling, do you think people still yell ball, or is it only when they oppose? Yeah,
I don't. Well, you guys have watched me. Like, I'm a ball of just stupidity, and like people are like, oh, he's a big Illinois fan, he must like yell and scream. No, I basically sit there and
he grabs the railing, folks.
Yes, I grab the railing,
death grip.
Your heart rate just
can't. Yes, I can't move. I get like this weird sick to my stomach. Like I feel like I could puke, but but it's not nauseous, but I just can't take it. And then when something good happens, I'll like explode in a clapping fit of rage, just like to get it out of my body, because the tension just gets so heavy.
When the crowd stands for like a big third or fourth down, Robert's the one guy in the stadium that sits down for that play, because he can't, he physically cannot hold himself standing up.
Stand. Yes.
But yes. You do explode after a touchdown with some of the most aggressive handshakes I've ever received.
Yes.
Or high fives, I should say.
Yes. I went in like at the Toledo touchdown. I went swinging through like the section next to me a few weeks ago, and I hit some guy just this, you know, this the high five that's like the solid upper wrist to upper wrist.
Oh yeah,
just like stings right at the base of the hand. God, poor guy. I'm so sorry. Shout out that guy in 231, whatever it is.
Yeah. Send your medical bill to to Robert.
Illini Board LLC. This is why we're an LLC. Yeah.
AP at
for that Illini Board. Reason. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Oh my gosh.
All right. Here's a question. Football. In order to win this game, Illinois has to do what? Like fill in the blank. What needs to go our way, or where do we have to have incredible
plus
success?
Plus two or greater turnover margin.
And stop with the freaking penalties.
Yes.
Want to break something. I want to say a lot of bad words.
Yes.
I want to do a lot of dumb things when I see guys after they either make a good play or some random kerfuffle happens, compounding it and making an even stupider decision to then cost your team. You're not proving anything. You want to show that you're a tough guy. I get it that it's the heat and the emotion of like I'm not ignorant to the fact that sometimes that happens, but when it's happening as consistently as it is for this team, you just cannot have that, because the time to prove that you're tough is when it's between the whistles. Hit the guy as hard as you can, knock the ball out, put him on the sideline, make him not want to come back in the game. I just can't believe that they're so, and especially in two games where you can get off to a good start and you can prove to yourself that you can go up against top 40, top 50 programs. You're just constantly shooting yourself in the foot. That's just you, tough, smart, and dependable. There's that word in there that's called smart. And being smart is not committing asinine penalties at what, every single quarter? If you're averaging more than one dumb penalty a quarter, you're going to lose football games. I don't even care what the turnover margins. I don't care what the yards look like. I don't care what the efficiency stats look like. Connolly's laptop could blow up, and I can tell you that they're going to lose the game if you keep committing 15-yard penalties either after the play or because you do something stupid.
I love the passion, Baylor. I love it. I love it.
Mental mistakes have a very, very deep-seated place in my heart. I can just picture, like, for my very formative years watching football with my father and him just getting so upset about it. And it has definitely translated to me, because I just cannot stand, like, anything else in the game could be happening. And you could also be up a bunch, too. I'm still going to get pissed off about it, because it just cannot happen. That's just not winning football. And it's just stupid.
Yep. That third down, was it a fourth down against Toledo? The roughing the passer that kept the drive going. There's nothing worse than that feeling.
Like, or the Tariq Barnes one. You're locked up with the center. I get it. It's annoying. But you also need to understand that there's an official looking right at you. He's looking at the quarterback, and you are going to be right between him and the quarterback. And so don't do anything dumb, especially if you're already getting in a tussle and you get off the field. And then that leads to the season. I'm not going to say that, because it's not the butterfly effect where the season is completely different if you don't get that penalty. But it was early enough in the game in week one, where if, you know, you start dominating on defense at home, you get a little confidence, get a little mo, bring it in a week two, you beat Kansas. Now all of a sudden you're going to be undefeated. You're going to the national championship. And that all happens because of dumb penalties.
Yeah, I'm pretty much what I'm hearing you say is Illinois football and basketball, we're going to win a national championship. However, the momentum died Labor Day weekend against Toledo, and we're not going to get there now.
That's exactly what I'm saying, actually. Yes.
I think that's brilliant. I think we're going to get your voice out there more. Yes.
All right. So, John, just a little shove. Can I just give a little shove after the whistle?
And honestly, you saw it even in like the I know that we probably have some NFL fans with the Bears Packers game, when you have that stupid stuff happening on the sideline when, yeah, like a DB hits a quarterback inbounds, but like, yeah, there's going to be some stuff, but having penalties or a guy pulls someone, a defender or an opposing player off a pile, you should know by that time that it is going to be 15. Like, you're in the place where all officials are looking. Like, just don't, like, it amazes me to no end how many mental mistakes guys will commit. And you know what? Maybe sometimes you just need that little bit of craziness, that little bit of insanity to be a high level football players. Maybe, I don't know. I didn't do it. So maybe I'm just an idiot and that's why I'm talking right now. But
I hate that I have become a fan who does not celebrate touchdowns until there's a full field point and scan for a flag, and then I join everyone else 7 seconds later. And I hate so many hot dog wrappers that have fooled me at the moment of, like, is that a flag? Oh God, is that a flag? Oh God, is that a flag? No, it's not a flag. Okay, it's not a flag. Like, if it's another thing, if you want to watch me in a game, as soon as there's a touchdown, I have both hands out and I'm pointing and scanning the field. While saying no flags, no flags, no flags, no flags, no flags, no flags. Yes, it's all I care about, because that moment has killed me so many times that I just have to know before I can let loose on, hey, we scored.
John knows my PTSD, because we were watching the Kansas game and I said the same thing. Every time there's a touchdown, I wait for the flag graphic to pop up. I just wait for, I don't know,
yes,
5 to 7 seconds. And he's like, wow, you must be a Bears fan. You have that level of PTSD.
This is the Stockholm syndrome of being a Bears fan, just expecting sucky football. Like, I'm not going to lie, I don't quite have that, but I'm also a Packers fan, so.
He slipped that one in there. That's one of the benefits of going to every game now, is I too hate the please no. And the fact that I can now control whether I know whether there was a flag immediately, I like that. Like, I like being able to, like, I'm not kidding. Like, the Myles Scott pick six. And after I saw, you know, the tackle kind of thing, like, you know, Finn go down and get tackled. Like, I'm not even watching Scott to see if he's going to score. I'm just watching for flags. So I've done the same thing. Like the Isaiah Williams touchdown at Nebraska last year, I had done my full field scan. I preloaded it into the system to where he catches it. I see he's got an open sideline. I'm not going to watch that to see if he scores. I'm just going to check the field so that if he does score, I know whether there was a flag or not. It's just how I have to watch football.
We all have crosses to bear.
Yes. This is mine. And it's like, I hate saying stuff like this, because last year, the first 2 years of the Bielema era have been different and better and everything else. And it's not like these two games have been horrific and blowouts.
No.
Played decent opponents, got away from us at Kansas, this and that. Like, so I do hate myself when I bring up that thing. But I always write as I'm the fan, and these are my triggers, and this is what happens to me when I watch a game. And after 35 years of this, this is just how I'm going to react.
It's interesting that the reaction to the Kansas game, I assume it's compounded by the fact that we didn't play perfect football against Toledo. We still won the game, but the Illini fan reaction to the Kansas game, like, Robert, I feel like you have as good a pulse on this as anyone, but you would have thought we lost the game 63-0, like the way people were reacting to it. And I know it wasn't a close game, but why is there so much tension in the Illini fanverse right now?
Do you really want to ask me this question? Because it's going to be 12 minutes of rant.
I want your 2-minute rant version.
Okay, hold on. Let me then slow it down in my head. I got to collect my thoughts. Make sure I know how to say this in 2 minutes.
29.
My issue with this, the reason I tweet things about, like, Bears fans bringing their Bears angst toward Illini football, is because I view college football differently, And I believe I view college football like most of the country views it, which is much closer to high school football, and those are our boys out there, go boys, than NFL football, fire everyone, these guys are bums, whatever, everything else. And so when I see a reaction to the Kansas game like that, my first thought is, why are we so professional about our fandom? This is college football, not professional football. It's closer to high school than it is to pros. And the argument I've always made about our fan base, and I used the term my friend Jacob said years ago, that we have a uniquely negative fan base, is that we bring that Bears energy. I'm not a Bears fan. I only observe the Bears energy, but for Bears fans, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. That bring me the McCaskey family to my driveway right now energy translates over to Saturdays, and that's what frustrates me about how Illinois fans will treat a loss, is that there still has to be this element of, this is our team, we're going to be out there Saturday, go get them, boys. And it just gets lost in all of this Cubs, Bears, whatever, angst, like yelling at the TV kind of thing. And so my point has always been, when there's an aggressive reaction like there was after the Kansas game, stop and remember what sport this is. This is a sport where your support of the team goes further than the way you view professional sports, which is, we have to apply pressure to the owner. We have to apply pressure to the GM until they get better players and they fire coaches. Like, it's up to us to apply that pressure. That doesn't exist in college. It doesn't exist other places. Other places have figured it out, and Illinois fans have never figured that out, and it bothers me. It's probably like 3.5 minutes, right? Yeah,
that was bad.
Okay. It's better than 9.
Also, like we touched on it last week in terms of, I know Mikey said that, you know, the Toledo game, we would have in prior coaching eras lost that by 14 or 21. And even I was thinking about the Iowa 63-0 game watching, or even I know people were talking about like Virginia last week when thinking about the Kansas and how that was looking like a blowout. Like how quickly spoiled a fan base can get by one 8-win season to then just expect, like, I know I talked on the preview about like, oh yeah, maybe this could still be a top 25 defense. If the front seven is elite and that can mask the back end, then yeah, you could still, but at the same time, understanding that that will not materialize immediately and there won't just be this easy transition, and that you did fight back. It didn't even look like the 5-7 team that got blown out by Virginia. It definitely did not look like a team that got blown out 63-0 against Iowa. Iowa beat the same Iowa program in recent vintage that now cannot even score 25 points a game. Beat you 63-0. And people are like, this defense sucks. It's like, yeah, there's things to correct, but it's not that bad. Like, think about it relatively. You can get, like, I just went on a rant about penalties. You can still observe the game in a vacuum and understand what it means to be upset about things that could relate to the rest of the season. But to take everything and project it out, like, there aren't still 10 more games left, and you can still, the majority of them are still going to be coin flips, much like the last two games. And that if you develop a couple things here or there, you lean, you get a couple lucky breaks, you might be in a very fortuitous situation. And then why would you freak out about a loss at Kansas when you were like, oh my gosh, we're going to win two games, we're going to win four games? Not saying that you can't feel those emotions, but to then hyperbolize them and make that your MO for the season, and then like almost rooting yourself in a place of, oh well, yeah, now if I don't root for them, it actually is protecting me, and that's okay. It's like you're just being kind of scared. I don't know. It frustrates me to know when that 1-8-win season then spoils you so much that you expect then to win every coin flip game. And not saying that you can't, and not saying that you can't prevent losses by playing smarter or a little bit better than you might have otherwise, but to project that out to the next 10 games and immediately think that it's all doom and gloom is just so frustrating.
Undefeated in the Big Ten West, boys.
Dan, I feel like you need to rant on something now. Everybody's bringing this kind of energy. I don't know. If you got anything out there, like,
I'm not the rant guy. I like to tee related. It up.
yeah, golf or basketball.
I like to tee it up for John, pun intended. No, John's our typical rant guy, so it's nice to have Robert have you on here because Mikey doesn't often rant too much. So it's a good counterbalance to John to have another ranter on the pod.
Doesn't seem like I'm just crazy.
Nice.
But I do predict we will be still undefeated in the Big Ten West at the end of this weekend. So
there we go.
People can calm down. There's still a shot to make a Big Ten title game.
There he is.
The season's just getting started. Robert, I know you do your predictions on your stream of consciousness, so you're not going to make a prediction. Mm-hmm. You can still give us a pick of the week, though, or you can make your prediction of what Mikey's prediction is if you want.
Yes, I can't do a prediction, and if I even try and fake a Mikey prediction, then
it might bleed into your...
That was actually a prediction. You broke your streak. So,
all right. Can you give us a player of the game, like a pick of the week?
Yes. My Illini player of the game. I have to say it, Matt Bailey. He's practiced for a week. He's been out. He missed the spring. He's going to be rusty. He's got to fit in with these new players. Like, there's so much to say it's not going to be Bailey. But I started talking about it at the bowl game when he got his third pick in the bowl game. Of like, it is so good that we just have one piece at safety that is coming back, that played with this defense, that can bring it forward, and he hasn't been out there. So, my guy is Matt Bailey.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I should necessarily put this out into the universe, but if we're talking about Stockholm Syndrome and a couple of fleeting thoughts that I've had, who was the last big-time safety to miss a couple games and then come back against Penn State only to kind of fizzle out and then find success elsewhere?
You talking Illini?
Mm-hmm.
Illini safety, you said?
Mm-hmm. Highly touted, had a great freshman year, had some issues that had him miss the first few games, came back.
Bennett Williams?
Yeah. So I'm just saying this is you guys were talking about Stockholm Syndrome earlier with like flags and all that. This is me being like, but what happens if he's a little rusty? And I just have that image of Bennett being like a step slow and over pursuing and in the hole. And I forget if he went right or left, but the running back just easily juked him and ran for a touchdown. And I'm just like,
I remember that.
Please don't let me be having the same visions on Saturday.
Rebuke that thought. It's not going to happen. I just have to get it out of my head. Mm-hmm, that it would never happen.
Nope.
Matt Bailey will be 3-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. It all starts on Saturday. Nothing will ever go wrong again. There. I feel good. I feel good.
I
feel good.
I appreciate that.
I do need, though, because Mikey likes to give a specific stat of the week where he gets a prediction of whether it's like a 34-yard interception or something, mm-hmm. something oddly specific.
Okay. I will give you something oddly specific. Matt Bailey will intercept a pass, and he will return it for 29.
I knew that was coming as soon as – you guys couldn't see it, but Robert leaned back in his chair before he let that 29 out, and I was – as soon as he leaned back, I knew what was coming out. That's what we call a callback joke, folks.
That's right, folks. And just wait until these two dudes turn 29 in October.
this is great podcast. This is top flight episode.
All right, yep. John.
I'm going to go a little chalky here. Not quite reminiscent of the effort with the barge formation, barge package, but I'm going to go Reggie Love. You know, I think that he needs to be relied upon heavily. And to be quite honest, he deserves more touches. Luke Altmyer let Luke run, yes, but he also should not be your leading rusher in any game when you have the talent that they have in that running back room. So I'm going to go Reggie Love, 93 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Wow.
Hmm.
The Reggie Love game.
Hmm. Interesting.
All right, Danny, what you got?
All right, hold on. I'm looking some things up here. I got to check the weather. People know these calculations. I get Danny deep into the weeds here because, you know, if there's wind, orange out's at least 3 points in my mind. maybe even 4 points for an orange out. Checking the weather. Looks like it's cloudy, 78. Wind. Not much wind. Gust up to 11 mile an hour out of the south. Not going to be too crazy. Illinois is a 14.5 point underdog, I believe.
Yep.
I checked in with my grandpa this week. I tried to get his prediction because he's got 87 years of Illinois fandom. And I said, what do you think about the game on Saturday? He said, woof, we're in trouble. So I got to go with grandpa here. Granddad gets the shout out. And I think it's going to be 30-14, the bad guys. Let's see, player of the week. We're going to have to stop the run. Give me Dylan Roziak this week. Little run stuffer. Hopefully he's shooting the gap and able to clean some things up. Maybe we get a couple of those.
29 tackles.
29 tackles. No, I'll take a forced fumble from Dylan Roziak and one TFL. One TFL and a forced fumble. Those are the predictions. Stay tuned for Stream of Consciousness, Robert's official prediction.
Bales, did you say a score? I didn't hear.
I didn't. In the preview episode, I said that I predicted three losses, but I didn't predict the exact spots they were coming because I predicted like three clusters, essentially, in which they would lose one game. And I said that if they lost against Kansas, then they were going to beat Penn State. But that was more informed by me thinking that we were going to be relying on the trenches and the strengths and not necessarily the fact that Luke Altmaier is bailing everything out. But that does provide me with a little bit of hope in the sense that if the one of the question marks has now become a strength and your apparent preseason strengths become the actual strengths, then you're looking at a recipe to upset a top 10 team. So I don't necessarily – I still believe that they can go out and win this game and be 2-1. I mean, I also said that if we started 3-0, then we would have lost to Florida Atlantic. So that's just like the reasonableness in terms of understanding that there's going to be a cluster loss or a loss within that cluster of games. So by that logic, even though I predicted a win against Kansas last week, I have to predict a win against Penn State. I think it's got to be a rock fight. Just the sheer way that they have to win. So I'm going to go Illinois 20, Penn State 17.
All right. All right.
Spice it up a little bit.
How many overtimes?
Hopefully zero. All right. We don't need that for Robert's heart and pacing and the railing.
That poor railing.
The grip marks on it.
Yes, he's bent the metal just from the sheer amount of force placed upon it for 4 or 5 overtimes.
One more question because it just popped in my head. Do we think we see any shakeups now that there's been 2 games? I'm thinking particularly offensive line. Obviously, Matt Bailey's probably going to play and he'll get time on the field. But on the offensive line where we've had some trouble, do you think we see some shifts there at all this week?
I mean, I don't know. I was texting with a friend about it and they asked me what I would do if like, and so I went back to my
playground days.
No.
Just everyone go right. One guy go left.
One guy left. asked what I would do in my, like I just went back to my January depth chart, which was, you know, I lost the bet to Carmen because I said, Adam,
are you going to lose another on Saturday?
Yeah. Okay. Let me just pause my little thing there and I'll tell you this one. So the other bet Carmen and I had was I said Matt Bailey would be free safety. He said strong safety.
I agreed with you.
Everything has pointed towards strong safety. However, what we agreed to is where he's lined up for the first play against Toledo. He didn't play against Toledo or Kansas. So say for whatever reason, Penn State comes out 5 wide in the first set and we switch up our defense. and we put Bailey deep in center field, I win the bet. So it's just first play on Saturday. Now, here's the funny thing is, you know, in a sense, this isn't really a free safety, strong safety system. So where the safeties line up will be different based on whatever, you know, look is given. So there might be some offensive look with just like two deep safeties kind of thing. And then Carmen and I will argue for the until the end of time. Well, actually, technically on that play with the strong side this way, really, Bailey wasn't the strong safety. He was really the free safety on that play. And so the first play for Penn State on Saturday is going to be a huge, huge deal. You know, I couldn't do anything. Isaiah Adams comes out and he's at left guard against Toledo. The end. That bet's over.
But segue. Sorry for cutting you off.
Yes. Segue to offensive line discussion. In January, I had it. Pearl, Slaughter, Kreutz. I actually probably had Avery Jones because he was still committed at the time. Pearl, Slaughter, Kreutz, Chrysler, right guard, Adams, right tackle. That's how I saw this line stacking up for 2023. And so I'm still there. That's what I would still do if I were designing this offense. I like Adams as a tackle better than other people seem to. And that's where I do.
I agree. I think you're going to have to also utilize more tight ends. You need to, whoever is out there at either tackle, just there's too much talent on Penn State's defensive front. You need to chip, get those tight ends out in the flat for little dump offs in terms of your fire routes. And when Luke, so he's not killed because what happened against Kansas, I'm honestly surprised that he didn't, you know, I know he left for the 1-2 point conversion play and Robert's guy got in there, but at the same time, it's just, you can't keep rolling the dice. And Zy Chrysler, he might ultimately be a right tackle. He might ultimately be a left tackle. You know, he just might need to refine his footwork and maybe lose a couple more elbows and take care of a couple more things in a few off seasons. But for right now, I think based on what you saw against Kansas, you can't leave him on an island. You either need to have a tight end lined up next to him or another offensive lineman lined up next to him at every single snap and just run six offensive linemen, even on pass plays, or shift him into guard, move Adams over to right tackle so that your two best linemen are playing the two most important positions. Well, the two most important positions on pass plays, because center is the most important offensive line position because he's controlling everything, which I will say Josh Kreutz has looked pretty good thus far. He's not perfect, but
I was going to say, John, do you want to, I know you're on Avery Jones tracker this year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell the people what you found through 2 weeks?
Yep. And this is a small sample size. So I'm not necessarily saying that this is going to be representative of the entire 12 weeks, but through 2 weeks, Avery Jones Pro Football Focus grades, 78.6 week one, 53.0 week two, his overall grade 66.3. Josh Kreutz through 2 weeks, 78.1. That is higher than 66.3 with two very consistent 74.3 week one and 74.4 week two. So would I rather have the very volatile guy or the very consistent guy? Very consistent guy when you're talking about offensive line. And I would rather have the guy who's higher graded. Granted, the caveat is small sample size, but we have also played harder opponents and Auburn is beating up on the little sisters of the poor sometimes with their non-conference schedule. So you'd expect for him to be playing better. So that's one of those where I will keep an eye out on that. I think around like week four, week five, you can start making a little bit better comparisons, but he is acquitting himself well enough. He's not necessarily the weak link that you need to be changing up, which I don't think would be the conversation that we were expecting to have in terms of if you were talking week three offensive line changes, you might be saying, what do we do at center? And now it's, we need to shore up the right side.
So if you don't hear from us in like week five or six, probably because Avery Jones is having a much better week three through five or
yeah,
six,
we're just gonna forget about it. Yeah,
we're going to keep talking about it as long as it's in our favor.
But there was that moment.
All right. I think that wraps this up. Anyone want to put a bow on it?
I would like to say, you know what? I've done all my rants. Like I feel good. I feel like I got everything out on this one. Thank you to Mikey for being out so I could vent. Like, it's kind of, you'll laugh at me. Like, it's my wife is out of town, and so it's just me and the dog. And sometimes you just you and the dog and your thoughts. And I'm used to at least talking to another human being. And so this was good for me. I got some of my rants out. I got some of the thoughts in my head out. I should do this more often.
All right. I'm glad we could be your therapy session.
Excellent.
John. Very cathartic. John, I know we talked about a film breakdown. Do we have an excuse for the people as to why we don't have film breakdown?
Throw it to me.
That's actually, yeah, we have multiple excuses. One that I won't quite get into, but I could play a sympathy card. Second one, yes, I can throw it to our resident Big Ton Plus account holder, Robert yes. Rosenthal.
Yes, we have a Illini board account to be able to watch film, and I only have access on my laptop when I go look up it's just a long story. I don't need to, I can't change the password. I'm trying to change the password to get John back in, and I can't get the password email sent to me.
Got it.
And so he keeps texting me. He's like, any news? I need to get to that film. And I'm like, just watch highlights on YouTube because I can't get to it. So, yes. We have a password issue and a password reset email issue.
We'll work on the workaround.
Yes.
All right. Well, if you're a sicko that was looking forward to an Illinois football full film breakdown, we apologize. Against Kansas. I feel bad for you, and maybe you should spend your time elsewhere.
You should spend your time giving me your password so I can do the work to anyone out there. My DMs are open.
All right. That wraps up this episode. Illinois, 11 a.m., not really big noon kickoff for two reasons, because they're not in Champaign and because technically it's 11 a.m. in Champaign, so it doesn't count. Penn State, Illinois, orange out, wear your orange. Robert and I will be there. John will be watching on TV. So, John, any big replays, feel free to just let us know how it looks on the slow motion replay. Yes. But we appreciate you all for listening. Mikey will hopefully be back next week for a recap. Thank you. And as always, go Illini.